It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our championship week podcast. A lot of big games going on between tonight being Friday night and, of course, tomorrow for Saturday. I'm Dave Richmond. Later on, we'll talk to... We got a big show. Let me give you the guest lineup. We have Tom Luganville of ESPN. We have Adam Witt, of course, of the App State play-by-play voice. They've got a big game for the Sun Belt Conference Championship, first time ever, and in Boone. And also, we're going to be talking to Mike Yam. The fellas join me for that later on in the broadcast, so we'll do that. Right now, let's go to Tom Luganville. He's joining us. And let's go to Tom from ESPN. Let's do that now. Championship week rolls on, and with us right now, I want to bring in college football analyst for ESPN and SiriusXM, and that's Tom Luganville. Tom, thanks so much for coming back on with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
I'm like a kid in a candy store. I can't imagine with your job. I know you were as well with covering these games and knowing what stakes are on the line. I guess we should start off with the SEC championship game. You have Alabama and Georgia. What do you think? A lot of storylines there. What are your thoughts on the Alabama-Georgia game?
Well, I think the one thing that's interesting about it is if you start peeling back the layers, is you've got an Alabama defense that has been exceptional versus the run. And they haven't given up big explosive plays on the ground. They've placed offenses in a lot of third and long situations, which obviously is not advantageous for you to convert. Conversely, if you look at Georgia, especially over the last 5 weeks of their win streak, their third down conversion rate is astronomical. It's 66%. Wow. Now, you'd love to be 38%, maybe a little higher into the 40s if you could be, and you'd be considered a really good third down team. They're at 66% the last 5 weeks. One of the reasons why is they've been able to run the football effectively on first and second down, so they don't have a lot of third and long opportunities. So something's got to give here. Does Alabama continue to stop the run and force Georgia into third and long? And if so, can Georgia continue to convert those third downs at the rates that they've converted in the last 5 weeks? Or is Georgia able to run the football effectively, maintain control of the game, keep Alabama's offense on the sideline? I think that's really the chess match here between these two teams.
And they seem to be peaking at the right time since that midseason loss at LSU.
Yep.
They seem to be really on a roll, and that's what it's all about going into the postseason. I had a quick sidebar for you. Do you think if Georgia beats Alabama, they're in the playoff?
Not only do I believe they're in the playoff, I think both teams are in the playoff. And quite honestly, I think the committee is hoping that Georgia beats Alabama, because if everything else holds chalk and Oklahoma were to win the Big 12 and Ohio State were to win the Big 10, the committee does not want to have to deal with that mess of who do you put in. They would love to be able to make this easy down the stretch. With a Georgia win, I don't think there's anybody in that committee room that sits there and says, well, even with the loss, Alabama's still not one of the four best teams. Of course they are. I think everybody in that room knows that. Everybody in America who's followed college football would know that. And so if that happens, then it eliminates the Ohio State-Oklahoma debate, which is a very difficult one to decipher. So that's going to be a critical game. And I'll tell you, I don't know how Georgia can hang for four quarters. Do I think they're the most equipped of the teams that Alabama's played? Yes. But at the same time, there's only been one team all season long that's been within 17 points of Alabama going into the fourth quarter, and that was actually Auburn this past week. So how do you get into the fourth quarter and keep it within a score or, you know, a field goal? That's the challenge, and it's the recipe nobody's come up with an answer for yet.
One more before we move on to the ACC. I wanted to ask you about would that also create, if Georgia does get in, does that create another controversy with that's potentially three Power Five leagues that are not in the playoff?
It doesn't create a controversy because of how the college football playoff has stated their bylines from the beginning, and that is it doesn't matter if you're undefeated, it doesn't matter if you've got one loss, it doesn't matter if you're a conference champ or not a conference champ, or if you're Notre Dame and you don't have a conference. It's the best four teams. And I think the responsibility and the onus is on the Pac-12 or potentially the Big 12 in this scenario of this season. They've got to get better. they've got to take care of business on the field. They've got to get better on defense. They need to make their own case through quality play, and that's not the fault of the committee.
Moving to the ACC, obviously with number two Clemson, Dabo Swinney just continues to impress me. You can't argue with his resume, unbelievable. The team that surprised me this year, I knew they were a dark horse, is Pitt. Do you think Pitt has any kind of shot to hang with Dabo Swinney and Clemson?
On paper, no. I actually kind of wish that Pitt would have won that game last week, because I think that actually helped Clemson to be playing a Pitt team that would have come into that game ranked. I don't think you want to play Pitt when they're not ranked. The last time that happened for Clemson, it didn't go overly well. So, you know, I think when an underdog comes into the championship game, it does change the mindset for the other team. And Clemson's done a really good job of not playing down to the level of their competition, but they've had some challenges throughout the season as well. And I think if there's any confidence on the side of Pitt, it's that they've handled Clemson before. They know they're outmatched athletically, so they got to come up with another plan. They got to come up with some wrinkles. I don't like the matchup for Pitt, but at the same time, I also don't like the fact that they're not ranked. I think the underdog role may play into their favor a little bit.
That'll be interesting to see. As far as the Big Ten championship game, wow, what a job Urban Meyer did in Columbus with Ohio State as they pummeled Michigan 62-39. I was really shocked with the 62 points on Michigan's defense. Do you think now number 19 Northwestern, can they hang with all the studs they have with Ohio State?
The question is whether or not they could score with them. You know, I had the Ohio State-Maryland game, and when you watch Ohio State, you realize they've got players. They've got talent. They've got depth. Their problem is they haven't been able to get out of their own way, you know, whether it's been penalties, whether it's been turnovers, whether it's been poor tackling on defense. That's been a problem for Ohio State. And then on Saturday, they put it all together. And now all of a sudden they look like the team we all thought they should be. So if they take the field in that fashion, Northwestern is really, really overmatched. Doesn't mean they can't compete, because you know what, Northwestern will be well coached. But athletically, it's not a good matchup for Northwestern.
And that's the reason why I think Ohio State, especially with the brand name, they've got a shot to get in the playoff because of, I guess it's not how you start necessarily, and with the committee's eyes, it's certainly how you finish.
Well, it is. And, you know, I think whether you're talking about championship caliber teams, whether you're talking about the College Football Playoff Committee, looking at teams, they value improvement. They value who you are now. They value whether you're peaking at the right time. And what do we always hear coaches say? We got to be playing our best football in November, preferably the last 2 weeks of November. And that's a very, very important trait when it comes to momentum.
As far as the Big 12 championship game, this is the one that's kind of one I've been debating even this morning, so getting ready for this interview with you. I'm having a hard time deciding really who, and I guess it doesn't matter what I think, but with Texas, can they do it again and beat Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game?
Well, considering the state of the Big 12, I would say that outside of Iowa State, they're the most equipped defensively to at least try to slow down Oklahoma. I think it's very, very difficult to beat a team twice. When you go back to the first matchup, Texas was a team that just made a few fewer errors than Oklahoma. That was really the difference. That old adage that most games aren't won, they're lost. And if you make some errors or make more errors and the talent is comparable, then you're going to be at a disadvantage. I look at Oklahoma now as arguably being the most explosive team on offense that we have in college football outside of Alabama. And I don't know if even Texas can keep pace with them right now. I would expect another 57-52 type of outing. That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Definitely. That's been the Achilles heel for the Big 12 as a conference overall, is the lack of defense. I'm a defensive guy, so I have to take up for my defense. AAC with the American Athletic Conference, you've got Memphis. They lost a heartbreaker at the Liberty Bowl with UCF as a rematch. Mackenzie Milton's out, that unbelievable, horrific injury that he had against USF last week. Do you see any kind of hope for Memphis? Because UCF has been like a freight train again this year.
Excuse me. I think this is one of those games where you get a real sense of depth now with UCF, because that element changes, not just the quarterback position. It's Darrell Mack now will come in, and he actually played not poorly, played serviceable last week when he played. But when you lose a guy like Mackenzie Mills, it doesn't just affect the quarterback position. It affects the entire team. It affects the entire locker room. And that will be my question, because I think Memphis is a pretty good group, excuse me, relatively salty on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm going to be interested to see if Memphis decides to come after UCF on offense and try to create negative plays, try to create forced throws that result in turnovers. That's going to be an X factor that I'm going to be looking for Memphis on defense.
Another sidebar, UCF. I know they're the outside looking in. Again, even with, I think, Mackenzie Milton, some people think even if he were there, they would have a shot at the playoff. What does UCF have to do to get in the college football playoff? I guess that's the easy question to ask.
They've got to somehow get into a Power 5 conference, because the way the structure is right now, it's not going to happen for a group of five team. I had an opportunity to go through the mock selection draft with Bill Hancock and the selection committee about 6 weeks ago. And when you go through that exercise, you realize that the week-to-week schedule at the group of five level is not going to cut it for a college football playoff inclusion. It's just not. And everybody talks about the opportunities that should be afforded to the group of five. And I can see a little bit of that. My issue is you're not playing against the same gauntlet week in and week out. Going into SMU or going into Tulsa or going into UConn is not the same as going into Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge or going to Jordan-Hare at Auburn. The opponents, the environment, there's just so much difference there. And I don't know if that's a good matchup for the group of five if you continually allow them to be in the mix versus teams that are routinely week in and week out going against those types of teams and what it takes to get through it.
As far as the hypothetically, let's say UCF plays a tougher non-conference schedule, that still wouldn't help them at all?
I don't know if it would help them enough, because I think what would have to happen, and I go back to Houston from 3 years ago, I actually had their opener versus Oklahoma when they beat Oklahoma. The problem is you can play an Oklahoma like that one time or maybe schedule later on in the season somebody else, but you've got to then not have a slip up in your group of five schedule. And that's the one thing that UCF deserves a lot of credit for, because most teams that find themselves in the mix for maybe a New Year's Six Bowl at the group of five level, they've done what they've needed to do in that big moment game, but then they have a slip up against somebody in their conference and it ruins everything. And I just don't know if that's something that you can overcome. So even if you schedule three big boys, I think you'd have to beat all three, and then you wouldn't be able to have a slip-up in your regular conference slate if you were hoping to have a chance. The problem is nobody really wants to play the group of five team that's really good, because there's no upside for that team, and it's the other team's Super Bowl. And that's why nobody wants to play them in the group of five New Year's Six game either. And I've had that contest. I had the Florida State-Houston game where Houston came in, and, man, it meant everything to them. Well, it didn't mean anything to Florida State. They didn't even want to be there. We saw that happen last year with Auburn and UCF. And so it's a matchup that's not advantageous for the Power 5 school.
Moving to the Mountain West, it's a rematch again of Boise State and Fresno State. What do you think about that matchup?
I just think that both of those teams are two of the most well-coached teams in all of college football. I don't care if it's Group of Five or Power 5. They're very evenly matched athletically. I like the quarterback edge in terms of experience at Boise State, but the athleticism at Fresno State, and for Jeff Kedford, who doesn't usually have a dynamic player like that under center, he can change the look of the game. So Fresno State, I think, probably is the best matchup for Boise, but I think Boise wins this one, but wins it close.
As far as the MAC comp with Northern Illinois, and you also have in there Buffalo, who do you like? And that was an interesting matchup.
It is, and I had a chance to see Buffalo earlier in the season, and they had an off day versus Ohio. Ohio beat them in Athens. But Buffalo's probably the most gifted team top to bottom when you look at the two freshman running backs, the quarterback Tyree Jackson, the wide receiver Anthony Johnson. They've got guys at almost every level offensively that make a difference in that conference, because the talent pool in that conference is so similar team to team that really you get one really good wideout, you get a quarterback that can run it and throw it, it changes your team in that particular conference. So I like Buffalo in this one close, but Buffalo is going to be the newcomer to this matchup and to this game because Northern Illinois has had such tremendous success, and they've been there before, and they know what it takes. But I think it might be Buffalo's turn. And that coach, Lance Leipold at Buffalo, really, really good. A lot of people may not remember him. He was the head coach at Wisconsin Whitewater, taking them to 7 straight Division III national championship games. So he's done a heck of a job at Buffalo. He's probably going to be a prime candidate for a Power 5 job at some point here, not too far off in the future.
As far as the Sun Belt with UL Lafayette and Appalachian State, who do you like there?
App State. I think that Scott Satterfield is one of the hidden gems in college football as a coach. They're so consistent week in and week out. They can really, really stretch the field vertically. They've got great skill on the perimeter. They've been able to replace the quarterback who had been a starter for them for 3 years, and then they don't even miss a beat. So I like the consistency and the stability of App State. And, you know, Lafayette's done a nice job. They've done it in year one, but I don't know if it's a good matchup for them. I like Appalachian State in this one.
As far as the Conference USA Championship, who do you like in that one?
So CUSA is a team, is a conference to me that I think is just so, so strange in terms of the top-to-bottom competitive balance. When you look at the conference, they are really, leveled out in terms of parity. I don't really know what to make of this one. I think this one, to me, is really, really close. I mean, UAB, to me, probably is the hotter of the two teams.
Yeah.
They went on that streak until they had to, you know, play at Texas A&M. That kind of created a slip-up for them, and then they end up losing another one after that. They've lost two in a row. But I think UAB rebounds in this one. I think Bill Clark is a Coach of the Year candidate for what he's done. But these teams are so evenly matched, as is the conference top to bottom.
I wanted to ask you, we're here at East Carolina in Greenville, North Carolina. We think that we'll probably hear something maybe after the NC State game on Saturday as far as Scotty Montgomery losing his job potentially. Are there other coaches around the country that may have the same fate as Scotty?
You know, I think some of the moves that you kind of anticipated being made that were not, guys like Illinois and Lovie Smith, that one surprised me, gets a 2-year extension. Clay Helton is staying for now at USC. I don't see a lot of other significant changes, and if they were going to happen, I think a lot of them would have already happened. With the new signing day right around the bend, you've got to be able to get things in place, hit the ground running, because you can't be void in that third week of December when you're trying to put together the next recruiting class with a new staff.
And one final question for you. You've been generous with your time. Mac Brown going from, I know one of your colleagues from ESPN back to UNC at Chapel Hill. Do you like that move by the Tar Heels?
I love the move. I really do. And you know, a lot of people say, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? Well, look at it from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, if given the state of North Carolina and the program, some of the tumultuous years they've had recently, not just on the field but off, you look at other good coaches at other Power 5 jobs, is the North Carolina job better than the job they're currently at? And would they be willing to leave? I don't know how many guys that are out there would answer yes to that question. So what does that do? That leaves you with group of 5 coaches, and there's many good ones out there, or leaves you with a high-profile assistant, and whether or not you want to go out and hire one of those guys is a little bit of risk. Or you've got a guy like Mac Brown who put the program on the map, knows the internal dynamics, has a passion and a fuel for coaching. He's wanted to coach the moment he got fired from Texas. He's wanted to coach and get back into it. I think he's got a good 5 to 7 years to create a real bridge of program stability, bowl inclusion, and then hand the baton off with the program being in a much better place than it is right now. So I like this. I think it makes a lot of sense.
In fact, my mom and dad told me to leave it better than you found it. So I guess that's
right,
a good
analogy.
Exactly. Well, Tom, how can people follow you on Twitter?
At Tom Luginbill, nice and simple, TomLuginBill. And And I'm not a huge social media guy, but I pop up on there every now and then.
And I know that you do great work on ESPN. Love hearing you also on SiriusXM on ESPNU Radio. So I know fans can listen to you there. Thank you so much for your time. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out, and we'll try to reach back out to you when we get down to the college football playoff.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me.
I had a chance this week to talk to Adam Witt, who, of course, is the play-by-play voice of Appalachian State. Big conference championship game. First time ever for the Sun Belt, and the first time they've hosted one in Boone, of course, for the Sun Belt as well. And so we had a chance to talk to Adam about the big game with Appalachian State. Let's go to that right now.
With championship week, one of the big championship games we're following closely is, of course, in the Sun Belt, as the Appalachian State Mountaineers take on U of L, and that would be, now let's go to the play-by-play voice of the Mountaineers for Appalachian State, and that's Adam Witten. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm great. Excited for Saturday. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You've got to be, as the play-by-play voice, you've got to be proud. I know that you try to stay as neutral as you can, but you got to be proud of what the program that Scott Satterfield has built at in Boone.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, as a broadcaster, I think most people try to go into games with some degree of neutrality, but I am the broadcaster for App State, so I am absolutely going to be a little bit slanted toward calling the games from the perspective of somebody who follows and cares deeply about Appalachian State. I'm a proud alum myself, class of 2004, and Scott Satterfield is one of the greatest coaches I've ever had a chance to work with in my very short career. So it's tremendous to see what he's done with this program, along with his staff, the players, the administration, everybody kind of helping to create this momentum. And, you know, they talk a lot about firsts for this program, and they've achieved a lot of firsts in a very short time in FBS, conference championships, a national ranking this year, and now they get to host the very first Sun Belt Conference Championship game. It's been a great ride, and I hope that they can punctuate an unbelievable season on Saturday with another win.
I think I know the answer to this question. Is there a motel room available anywhere around Boone right now, Blowing Rock, or and maybe you have to go to North Wilkesboro?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if you do happen to find a room available, you're probably going to be shelling out a few hundred dollars, maybe $200 or $300 at least. But, yeah, I mean, we've seen for a number of games this year that folks have had to go all the way down to Wilkesboro, which is, you know, about 30, 40 minutes away from Boone. So we've heard a lot of that, people maybe having to stay in Hickory or something along those lines. You know, I'm really excited to see what the crowd's going to be like. One of the things that was interesting was the Troy game last Saturday, which had so much at stake because App had to win that game to reach this championship game on Saturday. That is traditionally been a much smaller crowd in Boone because the students are gone for the Thanksgiving holiday. A lot of people have other things going on. You know, the weather wasn't very good last Saturday. It was cold, not super cold, but it was kind of dreary and wet, and there was ice all throughout the night, the evening before the game. And so we were expecting a smaller crowd, but fans showed up. We had 20,000 plus, you know, right about. It's a little less than what we have for some of our better crowds at home, but it was certainly a lot better than what we normally get for a post-Thanksgiving Saturday home game. So with that as kind of the table setter, and this game being much more important as far as now you have a chance to win the entire league, I'm really encouraged and can't wait to see what the Rock is going to look like on Saturday for this one.
One of the questions, I know it may be a distraction, but one of the questions that comes to mind, even East Carolina fans want Scott Satterfield. He's a hot commodity. Do you think he stays? I know you have no way of really knowing, but do you think he stays in Boone to coach the Mountaineers for at least one more year?
It's a really hard question to answer. You know, I'd like to say that I hope so, just selfishly, because of what kind of success he has brought to the program. But at the same time, I also want to make sure, you know, that he does what's the right thing for him, his family, his staff, his staff's families. And so whatever the right decision is, whether it's to remain at Appalachian or to move on to another opportunity somewhere, you know, if at the end of the day, if it's what makes him happy, then that's really all that we should be thinking about. He's done amazing things for this program. What I always like to think about with this is, if there is ever an opportunity, if there's ever a really good shot for, you know, a very talented young coach like Scott Satterfield or anybody at this Group of Five level to stay at the program that they're at, Scott Satterfield's about the best chance that you have, because of how deep his roots run with Boone, with the High Country, with Appalachian State, and not just for him, but his family. His wife Beth is from the Western North Carolina area. You know, they both have strong ties to Appalachian. All three of their kids are in high school locally. And you know, two of them play on the football team and one plays on the volleyball team at local Watauga High School. So there's a lot of things that keep that family rooted to Appalachian and to Boone. And so, you know, I love the fact that these are the kind of conversations and questions that we get, rather than people asking, hey, do you think Scott Satterfield is going to stick around, or do you think he's going to be fired after this year? That's the furthest thing from the question that we're getting. So I would much prefer, and I'm sure he would much prefer, to be getting the questions that you and others are asking, versus whether or not they think he's going to keep his job because he hasn't had success. And we all know that that's not the case.
Well, Adam, I definitely will trade you. You can have all the misery. You can have all the frustration, anger that we have in Greenville. And we'll take the success of Appalachian State definitely any day. Want to look at the game itself. You're the expert, not me. Help me with definitely the players to look forward to on both teams, and how you think this thing shakes out.
I think it's going to be a really good game, because of all the games that App won. You know, App's coming into this game with a 9-2 record. Of the nine games that they won, the game that they won against Louisiana was the closest. App beat Louisiana by 10 points back in October, 27-17. And Louisiana has only gotten better since that game. They've won 4 out of 5 since they lost to App in Boone. They feel like they were able to play with App, who was just rolling at that time over everybody since the Penn State game. And they were the only ones to really kind of keep the game closer the whole way through. So Louisiana's got a ton of confidence that they can play with App, even though they're a younger team. They've got a brand new head coach this year, Billy Napier, who has totally transformed the culture of that program. I'm expecting a really tight game because Louisiana's a really good running team. They have a three-headed attack at running back, led by maybe the best running back in the conference from start to finish this year, which is Trey Regas. I think you've got maybe the two guys who should be the front runners for player of the year offensively in the conference, and Louisiana's running back Trey Regas and App's quarterback Zach Thomas. Louisiana's running backs are big. They're fast. They're strong. They're really tough to bring down with just one or even two people sometimes. So teams really struggled stopping the run against Louisiana because their backs are so difficult to tackle. And they always seem to move forward for positive yardage, even after contact. So that's the strength of Louisiana. Their defense is inexperienced, but they've grown as the year's gone along, and they've overachieved a lot of spots defensively. They use a couple different quarterbacks, Andre Nunez and Levi Lewis. They rotate them in certain situations, but they're both very efficient. They take high percentage passes, and they try to get the ball to their talented receivers in space. So that's kind of what they do. For Appalachian, you know, their strength has been on defense. They've leaned on that defense the entire year, and that defense has come up just about every single time. And they had to against Troy this past Saturday. App built a 21-0 lead, but they didn't score at all in the second half. And the defense had to do the job, and they did. So the defense is going to have to try to keep Louisiana in the low-scoring situations, as they've done with most teams in the conference, because you know, Louisiana is going to try to control the clock, run the ball, not allow App's offense to be on the field very much. For the Mountaineers, they've got to be able to be efficient and, you know, just make sure that they get their opportunities and take advantage when they do so on offense. It's a very tough game. I think even though, you know, Troy, I think is the best team in the conference other than App, and they settled the score last Saturday, but Troy's kind of a beat up team right now. Injuries have really limited their offense this year. So I think when you look at Louisiana, I think you could potentially be seeing a team that at this point, because of their health, their personnel, and the way they've grown through the year, this might be the second best team in the league as far as who's playing the best right now with App and the Cajuns. So I'm expecting a really tight game on Saturday.
And I know one of the guys that's an alum of Appalachian State, and we were radio guys and friends on Facebook, and he posted a picture of my freshman year. I went to Lee's McRae and then transferred to East Carolina. But one of my favorite places the year I was there at Lee's McRae to go to Boone was McAdoo's. Are there other mm-hmm. places besides McAdoo's, which I love very much, that if fans are coming to the game, they would need to check out?
Yeah, for sure. As far as restaurants go, I'm always partial to Cafe Portofino, which is right around campus, kind of on the outskirts of campus, between campus and downtown Boone. It's where we do our coaches show every Tuesday night. The food's incredible. Good beverages there as well. There's a lot of different things you can do over there. It's one of my favorite places where I would go grab a meal after a game. And so I would certainly recommend that place. If folks are into the craft beer scene, Boone has really blossomed from the craft beer perspective. Appalachian Mountain Brewery is kind of where it all started. They're a tremendous organization. They don't just make great beer. They do a lot of things with partnerships throughout other organizations in the community. They're really committed to helping the community thrive and grow. And so I would certainly recommend that place. There's other craft breweries around there too. Boonshine, Lost Province, just a couple other places where you can grab a good bite to eat, get a good beverage. That's kind of my style. That's a little bit of my speed. Sit down, do a good meal, get a good craft beer and enjoy it the night before or right after the game. It's an early kick. It's a noon kick. So there's plenty of opportunity to drive around and do some things after the game. But, what that area is really known for this time of year is the Christmas trees. Ash County, which is one of the neighboring counties to Watauga, is really the Christmas tree hub in this part of the country. That is their main industry. And so if you drive around Ash County, you'll find Christmas tree farms all over the place. And one of the cool traditions that a lot of families have is they go to these choose and cut places. They go out with their families or whomever, and they go and pick out the tree they want. You cut it down, you tie it to the roof of your car, and you drive it back home. So I would expect we'll see a lot of cars in the tailgate lot with Christmas trees on top, because they went early that morning and then came to the game, or they'll be driving back down the mountain after the game with their Christmas trees on top. So certainly good places to eat and drink, but also some cool things that we do only this time of year up in the high country. And if people are looking for something else to do around the football game this weekend, that's certainly something that people should try if they haven't before.
You give me a visual of one of my favorite Christmas movies, Christmas Vacation. So I'll leave it. Hopefully it won't be a disastrous kind of day like it was for Appalachian State. Good luck to the Mountaineers. So obviously we'll be pulling hard for you guys, being from North Carolina in the western part of the state. We're in the eastern part of the state, but certainly good luck to you guys. And I hope you have a really big crowd, because it's well-deserved for the program. And what a great job Scott Satterfield and everybody is doing there in Boone.
We appreciate it. Thanks for the support, and we hope we get another one on Saturday.
Well, it's championship week, so we thought we would have one of our favorite guests back in the summer. We had Mike Yam from Pac-12 Network. And, Mike, thanks, man. Appreciate you coming back on with us.
Yeah, so pleasure, guys. Certainly pumped for Friday night. Should be a pretty physical football game. So I think the conference is going to luck out with a pretty good matchup.
Well, I know Bubba and Kyle, we all had questions. I'll let you guys go first and fire away at Mike.
Yeah, when you take a look at this matchup on Friday night between Washington and Utah, obviously the Huskies, they took down the Cougs last Friday night in Pullman. Tremendous game in the snow there. Just an unbelievable setting. Obviously that was the sixth time that the Huskies had taken down the Cougars in a row. When you look at this matchup between Washington and Utah, I was looking at some of the defensive numbers earlier for Utah, and they're only giving up about 100 yards on the ground. Obviously, Miles Gaskin, a tremendous running back for Washington. How do you see this one playing out on Friday night? And
you're right. I mean, Gaskin is tremendous. I mean, he's the only guy in conference history to go for 1,000 yards in four consecutive seasons. I mean, he has been incredible for this team and probably doesn't get enough credit nationally for what he's been able to do. You know, a little bit of a slow start for Miles, actually, to start the year. But it was actually that Utah game where he goes for, I don't remember the number exactly, probably about 130 yards. It was at that game. The thing that struck me the most about that matchup was just how physical it was. You know, been fortunate enough, you know, this season been on the road a lot for Pac-12 Network and seen a lot of these guys on the sideline. I don't know if I saw a game as physical as that one the entire season. I mean, it was awesome. So I'm pumped at least from that perspective on how it's going to look. But with Utah guys, and you guys know this just from being fans and watch games for all these years, Utah and Kyle Whittingham, what they've been able to accomplish defensively is truly remarkable. So strong on that side of the football. I find it hard to believe that Gaskin's going to be able to go off like he did in that week three matchup. Both of these teams are so vastly different. 10 weeks for any team, there's going to be automatic growth that's there. I think the one biggest issue that you could point to is just personnel-wise, just how different Utah looks. I mean, new quarterback, Tyler Huntley goes down. Jason Shelley's done a nice job filling in. Zach Moss, who I think is a Sunday running back, he's banged up, not playing in this game. Armand Shine the last couple of weeks has come on really strong. So I think for as much as it's automatic growth with a lot of these teams as the season unfolds, this Utah team really does look different, at least on offense.
Yeah, when you talk about Utah and Kyle Whittingham, the longevity he's had there, I think he's like tied for the third longest tenured coach in FBS behind Kirk Ferentz at Iowa and Gary Patterson at TCU. So they certainly had stability there, him taking over for Urban Meyer when he left to go to Florida.
The consistency that's there, guys, is just so huge. I mean, and the way he's been able to build this team before they got into the Pac-12 conference. I mean, they had some success, and you touched on some of the things that Urban Meyer was able to do with that program, and Kyle's taken it to another level. But the foundation that he brings and has built this program physically, I mean, West Coast football, people don't always think about big boys up front, smash mouth, get in your face, run downhill. You know, Kyle and this team, like the success they've had centers on defense, running the football, and special teams. I mean, they're not necessarily worried about getting up and down the field and scoring a bunch of points. It's kind of changed a little bit with Troy Taylor, their offensive coordinator, where they have been able to, when they were kind of rolling offensively this year, they had four consecutive games of 40-plus points. Never done that since they had entered the conference. I mean, heck, doing that three games in a row was something they didn't accomplish, and then Tyler goes down. But you're right. The stability that Whittingham brings to the table is certainly huge, and it's a big reason. I hope other programs, and I think SC's taking a page out of that book. You know, Clay Helton, they decided to retain him, and to me, I think that's actually a good decision. I might be in the minority on that one, but I don't know what it says about, you know, the timeline that you're given as a head coach to build a program, and then after 3 years get canned after a bad season. So I think people can take a page out of what Utah has done.
Just come to Greenville, Mike, and I can tell you about 3-9 seasons, or potentially with Scotty Montgomery, about what a 3-9 can do for you.
Yeah, it's a good call. It's a good call.
Speaking of which, with Scotty Montgomery, I know, Kyle, we base whether or not you should keep Scotty Montgomery on what Gardner Minshew has done at Washington State. You take as far as a talent evaluator, a lot of people, he would bench Gardner last year for a banged-up Thomas Cirque, who is a grad transfer from Duke, who Montgomery had a lot of experience with being the offensive coordinator. And then he goes out to Washington State and lights it up this year. I remember you asked me about that in the preview, so we wanted to talk a little bit about Gardner from the time we had with you.
Awesome. Stud. So much fun to watch. I mean, just the dramatic wins, the swag factor that he brings to the table. He's been awesome. You know, and it's disappointing he didn't get some of those other opportunities, but – you know, to be fair, I mean, Mike Leach quarterbacks typically have success. Saw it a couple of years ago. I mean, just in this time in Pullman, Connor Halliday, successful. Luke Falk, Sunday guy. Now Gardner Minshew, and, you know, just being around Coach Leach and talking to him the other week, he even said, look, I think Gardner might be the most talented quarterback I've ever had. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of scheme and Gardner's comfort in that system, I think, is a huge reason why there wasn't much of a hiccup when it came to the transition. him to take over the reins. But look, I think it comes down to skill set. He obviously is talented, but I think in Mike Leach's career, I don't know if he's had a group of wide receivers this talented and more effective. I mean, this is maybe the best group that he's ever had offensively. So it does help. You know, the numbers are one thing, but it does help when you have guys around him in that scheme that can thrive. So, you know, not to knock anyone else and what they do talent evaluation wise. You know, I think, you know, someone else's trash is another man's, you know, what's that saying? I'm butchering it mightily, but you guys know what I'm saying here. He was
putting, oddly enough, with Pirates, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
There you go. Thank you very much. I don't know how I would have forgotten that with Mike Leach being the Pirate that he is. So, yeah, it's been awesome to see him, and I really do hope he gets that invite to New York.
What are your thoughts on Colorado deciding to fire Coach McIntyre? I think he's an excellent coach. I thought that was very short-sighted on their part.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I think when you look at what this program was before he took over, I mean, it was bad, guys. It was year two at the Pac-12 network for me, and we started doing our training camp tour. So we hit up every single campus. I got to tell you, I mean, they were embarrassingly behind everyone, from facility to personnel. They had dudes on the football field, guys, that just did not look like they should be playing in the league. Just not there. And to see the turnaround, 2016, to build this program up where they get to a Pac-12 championship game, he wins pretty much every major coaching award that you could possibly win. And then 2 years later, and granted, I think last year, guys, for as much as this season went down south, the fact that last year they didn't get to a bowl, I think, plays a big factor in why there were some issues this season. 0-10 when facing bowl eligibility the last 2 years. I mean, you got to get with some of those wins. Now, I think you can point to some injuries, but, you know, for as much as we can do that with some teams, I'm praising Utah because they lose their starting quarterback and their starting running back, still find a way to get to the Pac-12 championship game and don't look like an easy out for Washington. So, you know, some teams have it, other teams don't. In terms of depth, Utah obviously had a little bit of that this season. Colorado didn't, but I can't say enough good things about Mike McIntyre as a head football coach and how he was able to turn around that program from literally maybe the worst Power 5 job when he took it over to a really attractive job right now in this league.
How do you think Mike McIntyre would fare coming out east?
Awesome. I think he is, you know, he's obviously got those ties to the SEC. He's got some NFL experience when he was with the Cowboys. And figured it out pretty quick how to go and get dudes. And, you know, dipping into that Texas market, guys, not exactly the easiest thing to do at Colorado, and that's what you have to do to be successful because you're already going to be up against – there's not enough high school top-flight talent in the state that can make a difference, right? So then you're competing with the California schools for California kids, which is already going to be tough. But he was able to go and get guys like Steven Montes, for example, who's been, generally speaking, a really good quarterback in this league. And then a guy in LaVisca Chenault, who, you know, we were talking about him, you know, early in that conversation for the Heisman at one point because he was having that much of an impact. And that's a Texas kid. So I think McIntyre, if he can't figure it out, has guys around him who can. And look, he's got plenty of guys on the defensive end that are now playing on Sundays that helped him get that run to the Pac-12 championship game back in 2016. So to answer your question, there's no doubt in my mind, guy knows football and can coach and be successful in any part of the country.
One more question from me. After championship games, of course, we move our minds towards bowl games and the playoff. It looks like the Pac-12 is most likely going to miss out on the playoff again. What are your thoughts about expanding the playoff to 8 teams?
Man, I've been saying this for a while, and it's so disappointing because if it's not the Pac-12, it's been the Big 12. And it's funny to me that when a conference goes to a nine-game regular season, slate like the Big 10 does, they get left out. You know, it's not apples to apples. And because the SEC, for example, is not going to go with the model that the Pac-12 and the Big 10 are going with that 9-game conference slate, like it's not comparable when you look at these schedules. So I'd love to see an 8-team playoff. I'd love to see all the Power 5 teams, their champions, get in. I think that's more than reasonable. I'd love to see an at-large team as well from a G5, like a UCF, like we would get potentially this year. I was talking about this earlier today. I would love nothing more than for Alabama to lose this weekend, because I don't know if you guys agree with this. Alabama loses, they're still in the playoffs, right?
Alabama, I mean, Georgia, Notre Dame, Clemson. You get the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the Big 12 left out.
To me, that is the best way to expand this thing to 8 teams. Like, if all three of those Power 5 conferences are left on the outside looking in, there's something in my mind that says there's going to be change. Like, I just don't think you can have it where the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10 are left out. Like, I just don't think that happens. So, to me, it's probably the only time I'll ever root for Alabama to lose a game. Because they're obviously in this situation, they'd have to lose. So it's one of those things where I'd want them to lose. But my eyes on that particular matchup, I mean, it's really frustrating that the system is where it's at.
No, we agree wholeheartedly here, and you alluded to it earlier. Then, you know, we're all three, you know, for transparency, East Carolina guys. And, you know, what we'd love to see here is for the five Power 5 champions to get automatic bids, and then one group of five, the highest-ranked group of five, get an automatic bid, and then two at-larges.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be all about that. I think that's the system that I would love to go and see. So, you know, I think the problem is if you have that G5 team, like, how does G5 team match up? Like, you know, if you're seeding it out, like, do you seed it where top four get byes, and then it's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 that all play each other? Like, I'm not sure, but if, like, 8 had to play 1, you know, like, if Alabama's playing UCF, like, what do we all think is going to happen in that game, right? I mean, who knows? But I think the reality is Bama would be favored, like, heavily in a matchup like that. But the point is, let's just get 8 teams in and figure it out.
Alabama would probably be heavy favorites over whoever the 8 seed was, though, to be honest.
That's true. Well, I think, Mike, the biggest thing for me is the fact that I think with college basketball, for example, and baseball and different sports, that they get it right with the tournaments. And sometimes I think when ESPN wanted to go to, for example, the 96 teams, I thought that was a little bit much, but I understand it's about money. And I just don't understand why. I understand that maybe the Power 5 conferences want more money and they don't want to share the pie, but I felt like that they can get the at least expansion of 8, they could get even more money. Don't you think for the Power 5 leagues?
Couldn't agree with you more. I don't know why there'd be less money in the pot for everyone. And I just think there's more eyeballs. Now there's the drama that's created with, you know, the reveal on Tuesdays, but I still think that applies to an 8-team playoff as well. You know, it just, the conversations are a little bit different, but we're all football fans. We all love the game. We all want to see the best compete against the best. And, you know, it's tough for me as a guy that watches the Pac-12 to say that this season Washington State, and I know they lost, you know, in a snow-filled game on a Friday night against their rival, who, by the way, is a really good football team, and they're literally like 3 or 4 snaps away from being perfect on the season and being in this playoff conversation in Washington. But, you know, I still think Washington State could beat Oklahoma. Like, I absolutely think they deserve to be all these weeks, you know, 4 consecutive weeks sitting 8th in the college football playoff poll. Like, are you kidding me? Like, and Oklahoma is sitting there 6th? Like, that's ridiculous. Behind a 2-loss LSU team, like, these are the things that are really frustrating. And I think if you get to that 18 playoff, it's like, yo, whatever. Let's just play the games and get it going.
How fun would that be? Washington State, Oklahoma.
Oh, it'd be tremendous.
Oh, my God.
We're talking Mike Leach versus Lincoln Riley. That's his protege.
Yeah.
Ruffin McNeil on that staff was Mike Leach's defensive coordinator. I mean, that would be an incredible matchup from just a standpoint of forget the two teams and how dynamic their offenses are, but just behind the scenes issues, if you know where Lincoln Riley came from Texas Tech, and then Mike Leach, I mean, it would be incredible, a lot of fun.
Be awesome. High scoring, and I guarantee you Washington State gets the stops that they need to win that game.
Well, what are you over?
I was going to say, Mike, a few minutes ago, we were talking about the coaching transition that's taking place at Colorado with Mike McIntyre on the way out. And you obviously had, I think, at least 5 first-year head coaches in the league this year. Can you talk a little bit about what your thoughts are there as far as Herm Edwards at ASU, Kevin Sumlin at U of A, et cetera?
Yeah, Sumlin, I think, had the most disappointing year because people actually thought they could compete and be a dark horse in that division. Herm Edwards went from laughing stock to, oh, my God, I think people are looking for a seat on that train that he was talking about in that press conference. And and rightfully so. I mean, we got to spend some time with that staff. He has put together a hell of a group of coaches there that are really, really impressive. So I'm not surprised that ASU is having the success that they are. And in recruiting, I think they're going to start crushing it. It's going to be really hard to tell Herm Edwards no. I'll be honest with you. I know him, and maybe I'm a little biased because I worked with him for a few years at ESPN, but awesome guy there. I think what we saw from UCLA down the stretch, you know, there was a point where I was like, damn, this might be the best two-win team in the country. And then they obviously got a win against USC, which was huge. But I think that team did not give up, got healthy, and played a ton of freshmen. I think they were playing maybe the most freshmen in the conference. I'd be shocked if that was not the case, other than maybe Oregon State, because they had a pretty young football team as well. Speaking of OSU, I think Jonathan Smith is the guy that is the perfect fit for that program. Got to find some players, though, on defense. I mean, offensively, we're pretty impressive and more than held their own, have a nice building block. Jamar Jefferson, who's in the top five in the country in terms of rushing. So I think these guys have done an awesome job so far this season. Did I miss out a couple? Oh, Mario Cristobal. How could I forget about Coach Cristobal, who I think at 8 wins, this was a successful season. People will talk about offensive line, Penei Sewell, and the fact that he was hurt. Guys, he's a Sunday player. He was awesome. Their run production dramatically dipped after he got hurt and wasn't in the lineup. But I think the thing people don't talk about is the loss at linebacker. I mean, it was just nonstop. It felt like every single week it was another guy going down, getting hurt, not being able to play, and they were down to like walk-ons out on the football field on defense. So 8 wins, I think the win against UW reestablished new expectations for this season, where fans might be a little disappointed on how it felt, how it played out. But I think all in all, year one, it was a good year for Coach.
Mike, I want to ask you, as far as the playoff is concerned, do you have, going into championship week, can you get your crystal ball out? Do you have an idea of who you think the four teams will be?
Yeah, for me right now, I think I think Ohio State is, I think they're just going to find a way, guys, for that last spot. I don't think there's any surprise. We're looking at Notre Dame, Clemson, and Alabama. There's something in my head that just thinks Ohio State's going to be there. I was saying that even 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. Like, it just, with the jersey, the brand, the fact that there are humans in that room discussing and having these debates and conversations, something tells me that the Buckeyes are going to be there.
A lot of traditional powerhouses. I got one more thing, then we're going to let you go.
Yeah.
Want to bring it back to your local, to East Carolina. And, just, you know, interesting question for you. Looks like we're going to be probably parting ways with Scotty Montgomery here in the next several days. Former Pac-12 head coach at Arizona, Rich Rodriguez, is a guy that gets mentioned by some fans here. With what happened with him at Arizona, and I don't know what your knowledge of the situation is he a guy that could get another shot, or would you just not want to go there?
I would be disappointed if he didn't get another opportunity, guys. I cannot say anything but positive things about my experience with Coach Rodriguez. Look, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, look at the success. And I know people will say, well, his last year wasn't great. Look, they won the South a couple of years ago. Revolving door of quarterbacks because of some health issues, transfers, that whole thing. But Rich is an innovative mind on offense. And he was out of school. Let's be honest here. U of A is not a football school. And I think Kevin Sumlin is going to learn that real quick. The resources, the facilities, everything is geared around basketball there. So to me, I'm hopeful. I hope Rich gets another opportunity. I think he's a good football coach, and I think he's a great offensive mind. So I'd be thrilled for him if he got another crack at it.
And our freshman quarterback with Holton Ahlers in that system, it would be like video game numbers, kind of like what Gardner's doing at Washington State. He could definitely do that with
that system for sure.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like the best part about it, right? I mean, you get – guys, like if I said to you, like, hey, you get to run what Mike Leach does, like dudes that can play, I would love that. You know, Rich Rodriguez, look at the success he's had and guys that have played for him that are playing in the NFL, the fun, the points, getting up and down the football field. I mean, that's all stuff that people gravitate towards when they're getting recruited. So to me, you run a fun system, guys want to be a part of that. Now, I think there's some off the field stuff that whoever gives him potentially another opportunity.
Yeah,
they need to look into that
about
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to figure out, Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. Like, Rich knows what he's doing on the football field. I don't know enough about the situation, you know, other than the reports that were out there. So I'm not totally comfortable speaking to, you know, what actually happened and what went down, because there's been some conflicting reports over the last couple months. So I could just speak from a football standpoint. No doubt in my mind, a guy can coach, and I hope from that perspective he gets another opportunity as long as they figure out, you know, what the heck was happening off the field.
Yeah, that's a great. That's why you're a pro and on the Pac-12. How can everybody follow you on Twitter? And obviously, I've been watching you on Dish Network, so. I'm a Dish fan, so I've been watching you there. But how can folks find you on the Pac-12 Network and obviously on Twitter?
Yeah, I appreciate you checking us out on Dish and Sling and like the 70 other plus carriers, because I always get that other question about DirecTV as well, which is out there. But if you want to get Pac-12 Network, you certainly can. There's plenty of different ways to get the service. I know popular now that Fubo deal from a sports perspective is there. But on Twitter, at @Mike_Yam, same on Instagram as well, and just Mike Yam on Facebook. So, but it's always good talking to you guys. I'm glad we got to do a little West Coast football chat.
Absolutely, and we'll be watching you, and hope we can get you back on for certainly with basketball, with basketball cranking up too.
Yeah, absolutely, guys.
What a great interview, obviously, there with Mike Yam. And while we have a couple minutes left of the show, I want to remind folks all those games, of course, going on this weekend, the championship, and we'll have a clearer picture, certainly, by the first of the week. Speaking of which, anytime there's any breaking news regarding the ECU AD search, of course, we'll have a special podcast for that. Same thing with the coaching search. Hard to believe lots of stuff are going on about that with several candidates are saying with the AD search. It's hard to know what's going on. We've thought we definitely have checked our sources again with John Gilbert. We're still hearing that he is the number one candidate. And I don't know if there's something on the Southern Miss end, but we definitely have double and triple checked our sources all week long, and we'll continue to work on that story the same way with the coaching search. So you can obviously stay with us for that. And we'll have our Pirate playback. Andrew Bodenheimer will be with us this weekend after the state game, so make sure you join us for that. Speaking of joining us, we've got a huge event coming up Saturday, December 15th at O'Cool's, 2 until 4 p.m. I want to give a shout-out to our good friend Linus Martinez. Linus is, and Steve and everybody there at Professor O'Cool's and the Big Lots Shopping Center in Greenville on Greenville Boulevard. They've been great to us. We had the nostalgia party back there in July 21st, to be exact. Huge crowd, standing room only that night. And this is going to be even bigger. The 1978 Independence Bowl Championship team. We've got a lot of players that are going to be there. Coaches are coming. We've had people that haven't seen each other in 40 years. Independence Bowl of 1978. It was December 16th, 1978. So almost 40 years to the day. There are no accidents. I want to thank Terry Gallagher and Thomas McLaurin. They actually both have put this together as far as the players and coaches and all, and they really stepped it up. We've got surprise guests as well, and it's going to be a lot of fun. By the way, if you want to, we'd like to get a head count of how many people are coming. We're at 2 weeks out from the event. You can just simply email us at thesportsobj@gmail.com. Email us, tell us your name and how many people are coming to your party. Again, thesportsobj@gmail.com. The event is free. We just want to make sure we help the folks at O'Cool's knowing how many people we're going to have that day. And it's going to be 2 o'clock until 4 o'clock for the live podcast, but you can come. I'm sure the fellows are going to stay around and socialize afterwards. So if you want to meet the folks from the 1978 Independence Bowl team, let's help them celebrate by coming out again Saturday, December 15th, and that'll be 2 until 4. Again, email us. It's going to be thesportsobj@gmail.com. I've had a great time. I want to thank my great co-host, Bubba Rosenbaum, and Kyle from LaGrange Barber for Championship Week. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.